In the aftermath of last week's elections, as everyone still tries to analyze and come to terms with what happened with delays and ballot papers and all of the like, we're talking to experts right across the country. Today in the studio with me, I have Mr. Graham Hopwood, the Executive Director of the Institute for Public Policy Research. Good morning, Graham.
Yep. Good morning, David.
So just to start us off, I know we spoke while the elections were going on. Now that everything's over, now that we had the extended days with sort of limited polling stations to access, what are your overall impressions of the elections?
Probably the first thing to say is a positive, is that Namibians were incredibly resilient, patient, determined to vote, and stayed almost completely peaceful despite immense frustrations last Wednesday and through into Thursday. So I think, in a sense, Namibia has shown its maturity, or Namibians have, in this election. But of course, then, you know, we have to come to the reasons for all that frustration. And that was a lot to do with the Electoral Commission and the way that they organised this election. And I believe there will have to be a serious reckoning on this. The default position of the ECN is always kind of defensiveness and denial. They also had a very rocky relationship with the media through this election. And I think, you know, that was also not good. But, you know, so I think there's obviously a lot of practical issues around the way the election was organised that went wrong and that could have been foreseen, and proper planning would have avoided them. Then there's the opposition viewpoint, possibly going to court quite soon, that this was somehow deliberate in an attempt to suppress particularly opposition voters. And that will, I mean, that will need a lot of evidence to prove. So we'll have to see what kind of case they put together there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, one of the things that came out of the results was that the distance between SWAPO and also Natumbo Nandi Ndaitwa and the next party or candidate was quite a way. So I don't think this is really about sort of overturning the election result. It should be more about trying to, you know, improve the way that we organize elections and to hold those to account, the people who have messed up in some way. And that means the commissioners and the chairperson are going to have to take a measure of responsibility here. And I've always found it very difficult in conversations with previous commissions to get them to do that. Even in the, I think 2009, I remember saying they should apologize to the voters for the inefficiencies, which were less dramatic. And they won't do that because they seem to have some legal advice in the background telling them never admit any weakness, never admit a mistake, because it might open you up to a legal case. So I don't know if that's the explanation, but their defensiveness and unwillingness to accept some culpability here, at least so far anyway, is you know, also a concern.
Yeah. You mentioned that potential legal challenge that we've heard about it. We haven't seen any sort of concrete steps as to when and where. We know where, obviously, the electoral court. How do you see anything coming of that? Do you see is there a chance for success? What could come about? A lot of people were talking about, you know, a rerun, get rid of these elections completely. Do you think that's possible at all?
I mean, a court could nullify the election result and order a rerun. That's a possibility. But I think, as I said, that the opposition would have to come up with very strong arguments and also evidence. This election was materially affected by what went on, the chaos and so on, of last Wednesday. And so I think maybe their stronger case, but I'm not a lawyer, but, you know, is more on the legalities of the proclamation and the way that it was amended to extend the voting into Friday and Saturday. The way that was done might be a problem. And then perhaps a bit more so the limited selection of only a few areas in the country that where polling stations reopened. I know they said in a very sort of one sentence explanation that this was because these were the areas that were most severely affected by the shortage of ballot papers.
Yeah.
They didn't give a clear rationale. And we know from, well, anecdotal experience of many people that there seem to be other areas of the country that were badly affected. as well, and not simply it was mainly the northeast, the north, and then that one polling station in Windhoek that reopened. So the justification for that could be questionable, maybe could be part of a legal case. And then I think their bigger argument, which I think would be the hardest to prove, is saying there was voter suppression.
Mm.
There was a deliberate attempt to make it very hard for voters in what might be seen as opposition sympathetic areas, which is probably the coast and Windhoek, to vote, whereas it was much easier in the far north, etc., where you might say the ruling party has its heartlands as such for support. So whether that could be proven, I mean, this is where the ZANU-PF sort of mention comes in, because that's definitely a ZANU-PF tactic in Zimbabwean elections, is to make it really hard to vote in opposition supporting areas and make it pretty easy in ZANU-PF areas. But, you know, I'm not sure whether there was any deliberate tactic here. It's the down to the opposition to come up with some evidence on that. But I err towards the, normally on most things, I err towards the idea that it's probably usually incompetence rather than conspiracy. But certainly if it is conspiracy, you're going to have to come up with some serious evidence.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, apart from the outright winners, we could call them, of the election, obviously the Swapo Party and Nathumba Nani, and that was still getting the majority of the votes. There seemed to be, going into the elections, a lot of the analysts were saying that people are going to vote based on the last 10 years, and, you know, things haven't changed at all, and they want to vote for change. And I wonder, looking at the opposition as well, where we see, you know, the PDM and the RDP losing a lot of votes and going away from being the official opposition. Yes, there was the sort of, you know, new kids on the block in a way with the IPC and the AR, but do you think that those, let's call them previous opposition stalwarts, were judged by the same criteria over the last 10 years, that they haven't actually been able to do anything much?
Yes, I mean, it looks like LPM have stayed more or less the same. I think the PDM lost a lot because people went to the IPC. They, you know, couldn't vote for the IPC. It wasn't a party in 2019, but they did support Itula, so they switched their vote this time to the IPC. So they definitely picked up some support there. Yes, the PDM is in a worrying decline, I think, for them. They, you know, people say Swapo might have trouble in 2029, but it looks like the PDM will also have trouble surviving unless they come up with some new strategies. I mean, I think obviously the economic difficulties of the last 10 years did affect the voting, and probably mainly for urban youth. We don't have and probably won't get any serious figures on how many, you know, under 35s turned out. But obviously with the high turnout of 76%, it looks like there was a fair number of youth out there, and probably they were judging things more on recent experiences. But I know from, you know, often spending time in the far north, that there's a strong residual support for Swapo that goes deeper into this history and the culture. So although many young and even middle-aged people don't have much memory of the liberation struggle, it's a kind of folk memory in the communities there, and it is a factor which helps Swapo maintain its support up there. And these northern constituencies are very populous, very big in terms of numbers. So they often, you know, have historically pushed Swapo through in terms of getting a majority, and they did this time as well. So, you know, there's other reasons beyond the obvious sort of economic factors that maybe influence the vote in the north. And also, I think, you know, the welfare system, the fact that people get a pension, a fairly healthy old age pension now, and, you know, a lot of people are working for government or are dependents of people who work for government. And the government, you know, styles itself as the Swapo Party government. So these things are factors which probably still make people sympathetic to the ruling party, even if they haven't been able to create an environment where jobs are around for young people. So a lot of things at play. But there were reasons why Swapo, I think, maintained its 50% plus, but, you know, the worrying thing for them, and maybe this is why, I don't know if you noticed, but on the announcement, the faces of Mami Netumbo as the winner, and also Sophia Scheningwe, that you would have thought they'd lost the way they were looking. They were very grim and stern. And it may be because they were very unhappy, particularly with the parliamentary performance, which, you know, was 53%, only just gives them a narrow majority in the National Assembly. But also possibly that they felt this election could be tainted in some way just by the way that the ECN organized it. So there was no triumphalism, hardly any applause or ululating. I think that might be a good thing if SWAPO is having a reality check for itself and trying to reset itself as a, you know, some different approaches post March 21st next year.
Okay. I don't know why I keep on saying RDP instead of LPEM, but that aside.
RDP are out altogether. They didn't get a seat, which is interesting. You know, we've seen COD and then RDP as split offs from SWAPO had a lot of enthusiasm originally when they came up, but then, you know, within 10, 15 years, they've just faded away.
So possible challenges, possible court cases aside, like you said, SWAPO now has a smaller majority in parliament. What do you see going forward for the next couple of years? You know, people have been saying with the AR in parliament now, it's going to be very entertaining. Will the opposition be able to work together to sort of counter SWAPO's slim majority? Or do we see a lot of sort of, you know, infighting within all the parties?
Well, one thing that's noticeable both on the SWAPO side and the opposition side is there's a lot of inexperience. There aren't many returning MPs. I mean, we have a whole bunch of IPC MPs, I think, is it 20, coming in, most of whom are unknown in terms of, you know, the person we know is Dr. Itula. He's not going to be in Parliament. We don't even know who the leader of the opposition will be because he's going to stay outside Parliament. Even the Secretary General of the party, who's quite well known, Christine Alchemus, is not in that list. So there'll be a lot of new people who we don't know, you know, what they can contribute. Now, we have a few returning faces. I mean, I was glad to see people like Tara Mutu from LPM and Ina Hengari from PDM just scraping in because I think I've noticed they make pretty good interventions, and they, from our point of view, they do a bit of research and that kind of stuff. So, still some good people. Obviously, having Joe Mpanda in there is going to be interesting. And then there's a sort of, well, it's almost a comedy factor of Lucato Lucato, who's finally made it. I don't know how much he'll be able to contribute, but at least he does represent a constituency community in from the Zambezi region. I'm a bit worried that, you know, the MPs who maybe developed skills in the last 5 years are now out, and the senior people from SWAPO, I know maybe some people wanted them to be out, but there's almost like you might have thrown out the baby with the bathwater because there's not even really there the basis of a new cabinet, apart from a handful of figures, because so many people either retired or lost their seats. So, yeah, a lot of uncertainty, I think. And one of the things that's clear for SWAPO is that the choice of the eight extras, the appointed MPs that Netumbo Nandi and Daitwa can put in there, they're non-voting, but they can be cabinet ministers. So President Geingob used that pretty well. He brought in people like Ipumbu Shimi, Yvonne Dowseb, Emma Theophilus, you know, people who made it to a ministerial level and generally pretty well regarded. And, you know, she needs to use that extra aid to bring in what experience and knowledge and maybe technocratic skills in certain areas to really boost her possibilities for cabinet. So, I'm keen to know a lot more about these new MPs, and hopefully we'll see some potential in them. But at the moment, it's youth, which is good, the youth in a lot of the parties, but also a lot of inexperience. I don't see many people with private sector experience or even senior managerial experience in government. So, you know, we'll have to see if people can rise to the challenge.
There have been one or two suggestions that I've seen online, you know, that the SWAPO party and Netumbo Nandi and Daitwa might try and bring in the opposition, you know, and offer a position to one of the opposition parties or candidates. Do you see something like that happening?
It's possible because President Geingob did that with Nudo and the Deputy Minister of Health. Nudo now only have one seat, but yes, she might offer the olive branch, but in terms of numbers, the SWAPO does have the numbers to pass its legislation. It just can't change the constitution because it doesn't have the two-thirds, but you know, it hasn't stated any intention to change the constitution, so maybe that's not such a big concern for them. I think they will probably just try to govern on their own, but maybe a token, you know, appointment of a deputy minister might win them the support of a smaller party, which just makes it easier for them if there is contestation over bills to get them through with a majority, a clear majority. But they, if they're organised enough with their party whip, they will have the people in Parliament to pass legislation.
Okay. Well, Mr. Hopwood, thank you so much for coming in and chatting to us again. I'm sure we're going to be doing a lot more of this in the next couple of years.
Yeah, and maybe in the next few weeks if the court cases take off.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Okay, cheers now.